Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. I'm Molly Myers, and Maggie Rietsch is co-hosting this podcast episode with me. And Maggie and I are really excited about this episode and our guests. We're honored to be talking to a couple of investigators from the U.S. Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigation Board, more commonly known as the Chemical Safety Board or just the CSB. So hopefully you remember us mentioning the CSB on many of our prior podcast episodes, including our incident breakdown series, where we recap the investigations that they've completed. So now we and you, our listeners, will get to hear from the CSB in person.
I would like to start us off by first introducing Lauren Graham. Lauren, can you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. Hi, my name is Lauren Graham. I am one of our supervisor investigators for the Chemical Safety Board. I started at the CSB in 2009, shortly after I graduated with my degree in chemical engineering. And I started under the Federal Career Intern Program fresh out of college.
And wow, I didn't know they had one.
Yeah, so now that's kind of, it's been recreated. It's called the Pathways Program. So it's a way the government can hire recent college graduates into federal agencies.
Interesting.
Very yeah. Cool. So since 2009, I've basically worked from intern status now to I'm overseeing our CSB investigation teams. And in that time, you know, I've been on a lot of major CSB investigations. So ones that are near and dear to my heart are the Williams Olefins incident. That was a heat exchanger rupture. Mm-hmm. I worked on the Chevron Richmond refinery incident, and that was a pipe rupture from sulfidation corrosion. I led the incident into the Prior Trust gas well blowout incident. Mm-hmm. And I was also the lead investigator on the recent Philadelphia Energy Solutions or PES incident. And now, you know, since those, I'm now in a management role kind of overseeing our more recent investigations.
All right. Yeah. Welcome. As I mentioned before we started recording, I've seen you on several of the CSB videos and feel almost like I already knew you. So great. Our second guest for this episode is Drew Solly. And we all have Drew to thank for making this possible. Drew reached out to us and struck up a conversation on LinkedIn after some of our incident breakdown podcasts. And after talking back and forth, we were able to coordinate and set up these podcasts. So welcome, Drew. Why don't you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Drew Solly. Like Lauren, I have a bachelor's in chemical engineering. I graduated in about 2010. I worked in private industry out of school for one company, and then that was for about 2 years. And then I switched to another company, and I was there for about 8 years before coming to the CSB. Now, both of those jobs were in the food ingredients manufacturing industry, where I dealt primarily with combustible dust. At the second job is really where I began to get involved with process safety. I was the site mechanical integrity element leader for my site. So I was in charge of all of the PMs and inspections and tests and maintenance for all our fixed and rotating process safety critical equipment, and much more deeply involved in the overall site PSM program than I was at my first job. I joined the CSB in February of 2020, right before everybody shut down for COVID.
Oh my, I bet that was an interesting time.
It was an interesting time. It was a great job to switch to a work from home job, I got to tell you.
good timing.
It was fortunate timing for me, yes. And so I've been at the CSB a little over 4 years now. In my time here, I have been the lead investigator for three investigations that we've closed. And I'm currently the lead investigator for a new deployment that we're doing, which is called Honeywell Geismar. It was an incident that occurred in January of 2023 at a Honeywell facility in Geismar, Louisiana. The three that I worked on before this were the Evergreen Packaging Hot Work and Confined Space Fire in Canton, North Carolina, the Foundation Food Group Liquid Nitrogen Release, and in Gainesville, Georgia, and the Loylang Box Company pressure vessel explosion in St. Louis, Missouri.
That one was close to my heart because being in St. Louis, I remember vividly when that one happened. So, all right, welcome.
So to kind of kick it off, this episode is one of a two-part series with the CSB. In today's episode, we'll be talking with our guest about the CSB in general, their great investigations, and what's going on at the CSB. So Molly, do you want to kick it off with some questions?
Yeah, so you guys talked a little bit about how you ended up at the CSB, but give folks a little bit of background about why did you want to go to work at the CSB?
So when I first started out of school, I saw the job posting for investigator, and I was like, what's that? That sounds great. Uh-huh. And it just seemed, you know, very exciting, like something exciting to do with, you know, my degree in chemical engineering is investigate major chemical accidents. So, you know, I came to the CSB and it kind of what ended up being what I was, you know, what I was envisioning in my head is it is exciting. And, you know, mm-hmm. going to these incidents and kind of figuring out what happened. And that's always been really exciting for me.
How about you, Drew?
Yeah, and for me, you know, I guess as I became more and more involved in the process safety program at my second job, I became, you know, more and more interested in process safety in general. And I, you know, also at the same time became less and less interested, or maybe energized is the right word. I became less and less energized by the day-to-day operation, you know, the run and maintain mm-hmm. of the facility that I was working at, and found much more passion in the safety projects that I was working on. And so, you know, on a lark one day, I had always been aware of the CSB. You know, mm-hmm. they show CSB videos in college courses. They did in my undergraduate degree course, you know, and then, you know, many companies show CSB videos in safety meetings and things like that. So I have been aware of the CSB since well back into when I was an undergrad. And so a couple years into my job at my former facility, I put in the website where government agencies post their jobs is called USA Jobs. And you can put in email alerts for when, you know, any particular agency posts a job. And so a couple years in, I put in an email alert for the CSB just because, you know, I thought that would be cool to work for the CSB. a couple years later, I saw an email that said, hey, they're hiring investigators. And so on a lark, I applied for it with no expectation of any level of success in achieving the job, because I assumed that there would be hundreds of other people similarly or more qualified than me applying for that same job. I put in for it, and you know, the rest is history. Here I am now. So that's how I got here.
Great.
Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
So can you both tell us a little bit more about what your jobs are like at the CSB?
Yeah, absolutely. For a long time, I've been here for about 15 years now. A long time I was kind of boots on the ground, going to the incident sites, you know, really uncovering what happened, talking to a lot of people, looking through evidence and putting it all together. You know, I still try to be boots on the ground when I can mm-hmm. here, but now kind of in my role, I'm overseeing a lot. And so what my passion kind of always has been, and which I can apply more in a broader sense, is how we communicate information. So I've always been, you know, very passionate about taking this very technical information we're gathering and communicating it in our reports so that it's an easy read. Like people can just pick it up and read it, and understand what happened, understand our findings and how to fix it. And so that's something I've always worked to, like, you know, mm-hmm. the reports are interesting and like keep you engaged and you can understand what happened. And so that's something I really try to do now with a lot of our reports is help, you know, help guide teams of, you know, what are we saying? How are we communicating it? Is it clear? and it's understandable. So that's one of my major passions.
Interesting. There's a lot of content in some of those reports.
Yeah, a lot of content. And we want it to be understood, and that, you know, you can pick it up and say, okay, I really understand what happened at this facility. And then number two for me is I want to work to make sure that we are extremely efficient in what we do. You know, we're a small agency. We've got, you know, limited resources, and it's important that our processes and our systems, you know, really work, and we can go in and do what we need to do. You know, we can get resources we need, like if we need subject matter expertise on a certain area, and just make sure our teams have everything they need. They can go in and get the job done, and we can be efficient with all of our processes. So those are things I'm really looking at these days.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I'm one of the investigators. So, you know, whereas Lauren is the supervisory investigator, she would be overseeing my or my peers' work. I'm one of the ones that is the boot, you know, that fills the boots that go out on the ground. And so, you know, it's interesting, you know, sometimes people ask me what my typical day looks like, and it's a funny answer because there are typical days here, but there are also not typical days here. I mean, and I guess what I mean by that is, you know, my typical day completely depends on sort of what phase of the project life cycle, whatever project I'm working on currently is. So for example, if, you know, I've just been assigned to a new project and, you know, an incident's just happened and we're traveling out to the site, my typical day is, you know, a 10 or 12 hour day out at the site, gathering evidence, talking to people, just trying to figure out what's going on, what happened, who knows what, where, when, why, you know, it's just establishing some of those basic facts. You know, if it's 2 or 3 or 4 weeks into an investigation, my typical day, if such a thing exists, is, you know, probably looking like interviews where we're sitting in a conference room and myself and a peer are interviewing somebody from the company. And that can be an entire day where I like to call it the CSB car wash, where they stick two of us CSB investigators in a room and they just run, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 people through us in a day. That's a pretty exhausting day,
but that's
a typical day in that phase of the investigation. You know, then fast forward a couple of weeks or maybe a month or two, and now we're transitioning from the fact gathering phase to the analysis and the report writing phase. And so at this point in the process, we're looking at all of the evidence that we've gathered. Some of it's relevant, some of it's not. We're doing our causal analysis. We are trying to figure out what do we know, what do we need to know that we don't know. And then, you know, that can go and beget us more interviews or more document requests, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, then fast forward another month and we're probably in the heavy writing phase where now we're not doing any interviews and we're sitting at our desk all day, you know, writing these labors of love that we call CSB reports, you know. And so a typical day there is, you know, I may not get up from my desk other than to, you know, go get lunch, you know, and we're just heavy writing. I've got, you know, factual evidence up on one monitor and maybe, you know, some, you know, an API standard or some other reference material on another monitor. And I've got the report up on my third monitor and I'm sitting there writing, you know. So that's a typical day in that phase of the investigation. And then, you know, very late in the investigation, a typical day might be talking to the company, you know, or just talking to various people within and outside of the CSB that review our products before they get published, you know. And then it starts all over again when, you know, we finish a project and we get put on the next one. So
do you often have more than one investigation that you're involved with? So you may be on the writing phase on one and evidence gathering or interviews on another one?
For most of my tenure here, yes. You know, the CSB, you know, we've recently cleared out what we and many other people have called our backlog of investigations.
Yes.
You know, so when I joined at the agency, I think there were 15 or 17 or 18 open investigations at the time. And there were maybe 10, I don't know the exact number, but maybe 10 of us investigators. And so at that time, the ratio of investigations to investigators was completely flipped in what I consider to be the wrong direction, where each investigator had at least 2 reports that they were working on at once. And many of them were years old, you know, which presents a challenge. You know, now I'm only assigned to one report right now, and it's a brand new one, like I was talking about, the Honeywell Geismar report. And so that is a new sort of phase of CSB operation where, you know, where the ratio of investigators to investigations is what I consider to be in the right direction, you know, so.
To chime in there, like the investigations take, you know, a lot of the mental capacity of our investigators, because, you know, you really have to be in it and in the evidence and diving mm-hmm. deep. So it's really hard to have more than one. So it's okay. good. Mm-hmm. It's good to have one person working on one investigation mm-hmm. that they can really fully focus on and immerse yeah. themselves in. So that's kind of the direction we're going, along with, you know, working with a team. You're looking at the team of people and kind of looking at the evidence together and really figuring out, okay, what's the important takeaway here? Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going.
When you're talking about the efficiency aspect, it seems like it would not be very efficient if you were delving deep into one investigation and, oh, now I've got to go back and do interviews on something else. And you've got to completely shift gears and mental state switching investigations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's, you know, that mental shift back and forth kind of just takes mm-hmm. like re-catch up time. So now that we're, you know, past the backlog, we had a Herculean effort by our investigators and our investigation right. team to close that out. We've kind of rebuilt internally and now we can, you know, now we can make sure we're committing our resources and our time with a team that can focus mm-hmm. and, you know, complete the investigations.
Cool. So you guys talked a little bit about your own backgrounds and Drew talked a little bit about, you know, how he hired on with the CSB. If listeners are interested in joining the CSB, you know, any tips or suggestions on how they should go about it or what sort of background you guys are looking for?
Yeah, I mean, you can look at, I'd say, as Drew mentioned, USA Jobs. You can kind of sign up for information to get an alert when we have a job posting. Occasionally we do the Pathways Program hires, which is the recent college graduates. And coming up soon, we'll actually have a new posting for people who have some in the industry experience for an investigator position. And so for that, it kind of helps to have experience with, you know, process engineering or process safety and mm-hmm. kind of understanding the process safety management systems and you know, have you done PHAs or incident investigations at your facility, for example? And those are all things that are kind of the experience that we look for people who come into the CSB from the industry.
So are they generally all chemical engineers or do you look for other variety of engineers?
We look for a variety. I think the bulk of our staff is chemical engineers, but we do have mechanical engineers and other disciplines that, you know, that's still, which is helpful for us to kind of have right. you know, different typically engineering backgrounds, but kind of different specialties.
We've also got a wide range of industry experience here in the investigation group too. You have, you know, someone like me coming from the food manufacturing mm-hmm. industry, which is primarily combustible dust, but I bring a lot of knowledge about how food facilities run and things mm-hmm. that they're thinking about, which may be separate from process safety, but as equally important to the business, such as food safety, something like that. We've got folks that have come from refineries. We've got folks that have come from petrochem. We've got folks that have come from numerous industries. And so it's really helpful when you start a new investigation and somebody in the investigations group came from that industry or has knowledge mm-hmm. of that industry. It's just very helpful. You know, the core of our job, if you were to boil it down into as generic of a term as you can, a CSB investigator needs to be able to understand how something should have happened mm-hmm. and should be able to compare it to how it did happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's not a skill that's necessarily unique to engineers or chemical engineers. And so, you know, some of the work experience that Lauren mentioned is extremely valuable in understanding how something should happen, right? You know, have mm-hmm. you participated in a PHA? Could you look at another company's PHA and understand what they were thinking and understand how they got to where they did? You know, can you look at a site's mechanical integrity program and understand what inspections they were doing and why they were doing them and things of that nature? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, thank you guys for sharing that little bit of insight. So can we dive into some things about the CSV that we don't know? So I know you mentioned at one point you had 10 investigators, but how many people typically work there? Are there any other interesting tidbits or agency history that may be of interest to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So something just of interest to know about the CSB is that we are a very tiny federal agency. I think we're considered a micro agency because of how tiny we are.
Didn't know there was such a title. Okay.
Yeah. So we have about 40 staff members, and then we have 3 board members who are nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And then of our staff, about half of that is our investigations group. The rest of the half is kind of what you need for an agency to exist. So
mm-hmm. all your support folks, huh?
All support folks, yeah. So we're at around 20 with our investigation staff right now. And we're working to increase that even further with some of the additional hiring we're doing. But with that, that allows us to have teams of people going to these investigations. And this gives us more resources for our accidental release reporting rule program that's new. And so we can really focus on our mission to, understand all these chemical incidents and release our findings.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you're considered a micro agency, because I think for us, it's probably the one that we, deal with the most or refer to the most. So I don't remember since starting college a day that the CSB wasn't part of our curriculum or just part of our daily lives. So I think you guys have a really big impact for being a, quote unquote micro agency. So.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know our exact budget number, but it's on the order of just over 10 million. It's between 10 and 20 million, I think.
Our budget is 14.4 million.
With an M, right? And so in the terms of the total federal government budget, I mean, I think CSB's budget is literally a rounding error,
Yeah.
It could be equated to that.
But you guys do a lot with it.
I think we do too. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your investigations and videos. And you guys have both been involved in a lot of different investigations. So can you just share with us some of the challenges that you've faced doing investigations?
For me, the challenge with all of them, which is also kind of the fun part too, is, we walk in the door at these incidents that have just happened and, no one knows anything, really. We're all just trying to figure out what happened. That's the challenge and exciting part too, of just kind of from the beginning, figuring out, okay, who should we talk to? What do we need to look at? Are there operators who may have witnessed the incident? We need to talk to the technical people to understand, how the process works, where it took place. So that is always a challenge, but a fun challenge is just the understanding part of it. And then in the end, putting it all together in a cohesive product that has our kind of logic flow of kind of what happened and why did it happen and what were the different causes and how do we prevent it in the future. And all of those just take a lot of, as I was kind of saying, being fully enmeshed in the details and figuring out what's important and putting it all together. So that's the challenges and the kind of the interesting bits.
Okay.
Yep. One thing that was challenging for me, coming from where I did in industry, I knew how to do a root cause failure analysis, right? I knew how to talk to operators and mechanics and management people. And so on some level, I sort of already knew how to interview people, although there's definitely some things you have to learn to do an official CSB interview. The hardest part for me was learning how to write a CSB report. I can easily understand, not easily, that's not the right adjective, but I can understand how an incident developed and what happened. And I came with that knowledge. And I came with the knowledge of how to seek more information and how to figure out what I need to know that I don't know and who knows that or who do I think knows that. But just like Lauren said, putting it all together is an entirely different skill set altogether. And, it's even different than, you know, I wrote a few internal white papers for my site and for my company when I was at my former facility. And even that is a different language than a CSB report, because again, we have to consider the audience for our CSB reports, and the audience is not always the site at which the incident happened.
You've got a huge audience for these reports. Yeah.
Hopefully so. Yes. And so, you know, we have to make, you know, to Lauren's point earlier about making the reports understandable and readable, we have to take these complex incidents and write them in a way that anybody from, you know, the spouse of someone who was fatally injured in an incident can understand it, all the way up to a CEO of a company that had the incident, all the way back down to the manufacturing floor. And so all of those people in our audience have different knowledge sets and knowledge bases and skill sets. And so to write a product that we think everybody can understand, it was extremely challenging for me to learn personally. I'd like to think I'm way better at it now than when I started. Sometimes when I need a laugh, I go look at some of the first few things that I wrote and I just to laugh at myself. But, you know, that was one of the hardest things. And that's something that that takes time to learn. You know, everybody I've seen that's joined the CSB after me has also had to learn that skill. And we've had to spend a lot of time and energy sort of enmeshing them and immersing them in that writing philosophy about how we write our reports.
You know, that's not what I would have thought would be the biggest challenge.
it surprises you. I mean, you know, another thing that's challenging, of course, is like Lauren said, showing up at different facilities. I mean, just in my time at the CSB, I've gone to a chicken freezing facility, an oil refinery, a paper mill, a petrochemical facility, and I don't know any of those processes. I had never set foot in an oil refinery before I deployed with the BP Husky Toledo refinery team.
Very different than a food manufacturer, right?
Absolutely. You know, the chemistry is different and the process and the equipment is different, but really, you know, it all boils down to some of the same things, right? You know, it's all unit operations. You know, a distillation column at an oil refinery is no different than a distillation column at a petrochemical facility and is no different than the food distillation column that I ran at one of my old jobs. Mm-hmm. And so if you can boil it down to those component parts, pun slightly intended, talking about distillation, you know, if you can do that, then it's not that much of a leap to understand how the process is intended to work. You know, pumps are pumps, heat exchangers are heat exchangers. So, you know, on some level, the unit operations are quote unquote all the same. Mm-hmm. They just have different stuff inside them, you know.
Good point.
And so, yeah, you know, but that is challenging, you know.
To build on that, you know, we go in and we need to have expertise in that particular unit where the incident happened. And so it's coming in with this learning mentality, because even if you've been a process engineer at an oil refinery, if you go walk into another refinery, you know, you might be a different unit, different configuration, maybe slightly different equipment, you know, different terms being used depending on the company. So we always have to kind of learn all of those aspects every time. And it's just a matter of going in, you know, like, okay, we have a lot to learn here. We're going to, you know, delve into it, you know, talk to who we need to talk to and really understand the process and what led to this incident.
Mm-hmm. What would you both say is the most interesting thing that you've learned during one of these investigations?
I think all of the investigations have their own facets that are, you know, are really kind of interesting to delve into. I'll actually go back to the Prior Trust gas well blowout. So that was a, you know, completely different industry sector, you know, for me when I was going into it. And, you know, and I worked with people who were experts, you know, experts in drilling oil and gas wells. Mm-hmm. And I went to well control school and learned how oil drillers control the well and prevent influxes. Mm-hmm. What do they do? And I just learned so much, which was just really, really fascinating. And then getting to, you know, once I, you know, because I came in with the investigation knowledge, like, how do we investigate this incident and find it? And then I had to have this additional, you know, subject matter expertise of people who've done this their whole career. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, putting that all together and then being able to, you know, look at this day's worth of data leading to the incident and being able to say, okay, here's where the gas influx happened and this is how it's breaking up and this is when it, you know, it blew out and these were all the warning signs. That was a challenge and was also just very, you know, very interesting. And I was very happy when I was able to, you know, communicate all of that and relay all of the really important lessons from the incident and the recommendations that could help prevent that accident from happening again. You know, five people were killed. They were trying to drill an oil and gas well. So, you know, and that report can help prevent that again. And so that was just one of the many investigations I was very proud of to have worked on.
Yeah, I was interested in reading that because I had never done anything with a oil and gas well. And so I thought you did a great job of explaining it in a way that folks unfamiliar with that type of process could relate to it. And once I finally read it, it's like, oh, now this makes a lot more sense. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and for me, I can't point out to anything, any one thing that was the most interesting. It's very difficult for me to do that. I find myself constantly saying with every single new project that I work on here at the CSB that this is the most interesting thing I've ever worked on. And, you know, my coworkers now roll their eyes every time I say that because I say it so frequently, but I find it true. I mean, I guess as an individual, I just like to learn and I like to discover and I like to understand how things work. And so you get to do all of that over and over again here at the CSB every time you get on a new investigation. You know, just like we've talked about before, you know, we have to quickly become knowledgeable on whatever the process is at whatever the place is that had the incident. And, you know, so we're showing up on day one with no knowledge or maybe some relevant knowledge from, you know, an individual investigator's, you know, work experience or something like that. We're coming from that state to the point where we can write a report about it and talk knowledgeably about it and produce a video about it. And that is just the process of doing that is fascinating to me. And the process of getting from day one to publication day is super interesting to me. And there's no, for those reasons, it's hard for me to pick out any one thing and call that the most interesting thing that I've worked on because it's all fascinating to me. It's all interesting.
Sounds like you've landed in your dream job, Drew.
I would say that, yes. I love working at the CSB. I am tickled pink every time I get to wake up and go to work. I mean, I really love working here.
That's the kind of job everybody hopes that they get. Perfect fit. Cool. So why don't we go ahead and start talking a little bit about the investigation reports? You've obviously worked on several of them. You talked about the challenges of making those understandable. How do you guys want people to utilize those?
We know a lot of the audience first gets a feel of some of the incidents from the videos. But for things in the videos people see that are relevant to them, I always recommend going to look at the report, which will dive into more detail than the video does. But from the reports, you know, we want people who work at chemical processing facilities, if there's to look in there for any lessons they can apply to their own facilities. And so we try to call those, some of the particular lessons out with every report we publish, key lessons. So what are the major takeaways that any facility can take away and kind of learn from the incident to apply to their own facility? So that's one. I'd say just take a look at the key lessons for kind of a quick way to get info from the reports. And then also just thinking about as you go through the incident description and our analysis, does any of that also ring true at your facility? Is there something you see that's similar? And then hopefully just taking those lessons from the report and then just proactively then applying them at your own facility. And I think that's just one of our main goals with all of our publications.
And I think we take a lot of effort in constructing the reports to help people do that. I mean, there are, I think, several ways that you can digest a CSB report. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about with people that work on my teams is that, like, what's the right level of Zoom? You know, the concept of Zoom, which is nothing more than how detailed do we get about a particular topic. You know, you can zoom all the way in and, you know, be extremely detailed down to the process chemistry and conditions, but is that the message that we need to talk about? Is that what's important? Mm-hmm. Of course, it's interesting, but just because something's interesting doesn't mean that that's the message that we need to talk about. And so sometimes we need to talk about zooming out a little bit and see the forest instead of the trees. And the way we construct our reports, in my mind, at least on the reports that I am the primary author of, this is how I try to do it. You know, we have, for example, the executive summary. So if somebody mm-hmm. wants to dive in and just read the executive summary, they could just read the executive summary and get a decent feel for what happened. In the back of the report, I forget what section number we're numbering it now, but it's the conclusion section where mm-hmm. it's, you know, conclusion one, blah, 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 conclusion two, blah, blah, blah. And so that's sort of an item by item. You know, you could just dive in and read the conclusion section. You could read the executive mm-hmm. summary and then jump to the conclusion section and read that and have a little bit better idea of what happened. And then for any particular topic that catches someone's interest, you can then go to the narrative section of the report for that particular topic, and you can zoom in even further. Mm-hmm. And so I like to think that the reports are being used in that way. Sometimes the best way for somebody to gain information from the report isn't necessarily to just sit down and read a 100-page report. But, you know, we try to make the reports no longer than we think they need to be. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a grade school book report where we have a page count. We want to make them long enough to get everything in there that we think is important, but not so long that they become too much of a pain to read, and not so short that we leave out important information.
Right.
And so that's a challenge, is, you know, how long do we make this? What level of detail do we go into? What are the safety topics that we're going to talk about? How are we going to frame some of these things? Because part of our job is simply just laying out the facts of what happened. Mm-hmm. Right. And so usually the front end of our reports are devoted to that. But then the back half of our reports are usually then devoted to analyzing those facts and making safety lessons out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like your comment about the level of zoom, because some of them you have to go into the detail, like one of them where they opened the wrong bolts on a valve. You know, you have to delve into the details of the bolts to make sense of it, whereas other ones, you know, a bigger picture of managing your ignition sources and things like that is a little higher level. So interesting.
Exactly.
So hopefully our listeners are familiar with the videos. We've talked about those. And I know I've used those quite frequently when I'm doing a training class on various aspects of process safety. And I'll pick certain videos to highlight specific process safety management systems or approaches and use that to kick off a good group discussion. As Drew mentioned, sometimes they're used for monthly safety meetings or group meetings and things of that sort. Are there other ways that you guys would like to see people utilize those videos?
I think the videos, if a listener is unfamiliar with the videos, we create an animation of the incident. So you can see how this incident progressed. And it's amazing, you know, how our video team, how realistic these videos are looking these days. Every time I see one of our new ones, I'm just like in awe of how great it is. But you know, what we do in the videos is we animate the incident sequence so you can see what happened. And then we talk about the safety issues. So what you're going to get is kind of the high level findings and recommendations that we talk about. And so from the videos, you're getting a very good summary of, you know, what happened in the incident, what are the major findings, what were our recommendations. So for a lot of people, you know, you're going to get the main messages that are helpful in the video. And that's just a good way to see, you know, is this incident relevant to our kind of our site and our operations? Mm-hmm. And again, that's a good time, if it is very relevant, to go in and look at the report at that time. But I think that's would be a great way to use the videos.
Yeah, Lauren said it perfectly. I have nothing to add. I mean, I think for the most part, people are using them for their intended use.
Awesome. So the CSB issued a huge number of investigation reports, and we've touched on it a little bit regarding the backlog. So in the past 18 months, cleared that out. What's next for you all?
Yeah, so we have 4 deployed investigations going on right now. were investigating a refinery incident that happened at a BP Husky refinery in Toledo, Ohio. We are investigating a furnace tube rupture that happened at a Marathon Renewables facility in Martinez, California. And we recently just announced that we're deploying to two incidents that happened in 2023 that were reported to us under our accidental release reporting rule, one of which Drew is going to be leading that he can talk about, but it's going to be the a Dow facility. There was an ethylene oxide release and explosion. And then at a Honeywell facility, there was a release of hydrofluoric acid and chlorine. So that's what's going on. And, you know, now that we have the ability, we're deploying to more incidents now that the backlog is closed.
And are you using that incident reporting tool that's been going on for, what, about 2 years, 2.5 years, to kind of screen incidents?
Yeah, so the accidental release reporting rule went into effect in 2020. And since then, we are able to, you know, get information on every chemical incident within our jurisdiction. So that's every release of an extremely hazardous substance at a fixed chemical facility that results in over $1 million in property damage, a serious injury, or a fatality. Mm-hmm. So with that information, you know, we can see trends and incidents, or get a little bit more information on kind of what are the details of the incident before we deploy to it. So, so two of those incidents were the 2023 incidents that were reported to us under the accidental release reporting rule, and kind of based on the information we saw, they seem like they could be very important incidents for us to delve a little bit deeper into. So that's what we're doing here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, As mundane as it might sound, the accidental release reporting rule, I think, is probably the most exciting thing going on at the CSB right now. You know, everybody in the investigations group and within the agency, we're all very excited with the potential that information has. And it's something that the CSB has not done before. Everyone's used to the CSB's long form reports on whichever incidents they deploy people to. But what about everything else? And so this program is really the CSB's opportunity to start talking about that, quote unquote, everything else. You know, those incidents that happen, that get reported to us, that maybe make news headlines, that are just as severe as any of the incidents that we do deploy to, but that for whatever reason we didn't deploy to. And so, I mean, without trying to, you know, overemphasize or anything, I think, you know, again, as mundane as it sounds, that accidental release reporting information, I think there's a lot of things that the agency can do with that. Oh, and, cool. And is talking about doing and is planning to do.
Well, we look forward to seeing what new information transpires out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, like Lauren said, I'm now leading an investigation. You know, let's take a look. The Honeywell investigation, that incident happens in January of 2023. Mm-hmm. The CSB investigations group is working furiously to close the existing open investigations and so therefore doesn't really have the manpower to go to that incident that we otherwise might have had we had the bandwidth for. Now the backlog is closed and that one caught our eye, and now we can go to incidents that got reported to us that didn't get deployed to at the time contemporaneously. You know, I happen to be leading one. That's going to be a new thing for the CSB. But yeah, this accidental release reporting rule program, I think, is extremely exciting.
It definitely sounds like it. I know in the past, you know, working in industry, you hear about things, whether it's a peer that works at another plant. I know the Dow one hits a little close to home for me. I used to work in Louisiana, not at that plant, not at that facility, but close by. So it's things that you hear about happening, and then you're like, I wonder if there's going to be a report on this or more information is going to come out, because sometimes you only get little tidbits here and there, and sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, right? So it's exciting to hear that we'll get more of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Well, appreciate your time. Was there any other topics that we haven't touched on you wanted to bring up?
I think that's it for me. I think we covered a lot of ground. Drew, do you have anything else?
None for me.
Well, thank you both for being here today. for our listeners, if you have a comment about this week's episode or an idea for a future episode or any questions about anything process safety related, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a voice message using the link in our episode description or shoot an email to podcast@amplifyconsultants.com.
Yeah, and as we mentioned earlier, this is part of a two-part series with a CSB. So be sure to tune into the next episode where we're going to be talking about additional things going on at the CSB with a couple other investigators. So we appreciate your time, Lauren and Drew, and thanks for joining us.
And thank you for having us today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise, thanks for having us.
We would like to thank the CSB for their excellent work. They provide an invaluable service by investigating these process safety incidents, which allow others to learn without having to repeat those mistakes. For further information about the CSB and their incident investigations, visit the CSB website at csb.gov.
And finally, our goal at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle these highly hazardous chemicals. And we're hoping that they create world-class process safety systems. It's our firm belief that these systems will help prevent catastrophic incidents like fires, explosions, and toxic releases, the very things that the CSB investigates. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help guide you on your process safety journey.
Thank you for listening, and until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.